I hope you enjoy this video as we start to lead into the message today. And this video, which is very much on topic today.
Get the papers. I put them on your desk before I...
Okay. Whoa! Cool! She's gotta be kidding me. Thank you. outside.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that video. Somebody gifted me with it, and I really enjoyed it. And so much on topic with what we want to talk about today. But I do have a really short story to share with you. And it's about Christmas and a gift. And this husband goes up to his wife, and he said, you know, it's really important to me. What can I get you for Christmas? What would you really, really like? And the wife said, well, I'm really sorry to tell you this, but to be perfectly honest, what I really would want is a divorce. And the husband paused for a moment and he said, can you think of anything cheaper? Well, it's good to see a few smiles anyway. See that, Susan? Some people think my jokes are funny. Well, here we are, just 2 days after Christmas. And hopefully, it's not a time for us to start looking at Christmas in the rear view mirror. Hopefully, we ought to continue to enjoy everything that is wonderful about Christmas. Hopefully we continue to enjoy everything that is promised to us in Christmas. And hopefully our perspective about Christmas has expanded so that Christmas has transcended to much more than the date of December the 25th. Hopefully today and in the days and weeks to come, we can grow in appreciation and put to good use the gifts that we have received. So this is an excellent time to talk about gifts, and I want to look at gifts and gift giving from a couple of different angles. The whole world of gifts really is a very fascinating phenomenon. The Christmas season officially begins the day after Thanksgiving on Black Friday. And it certainly was restricted this year because of the pandemic, but usually throngs of people head out to the malls trying to find just the right gifts for others. And to their credit, many people really put in a lot of time and effort and energy just trying to find a perfect gift that will be well received, especially by people that they love. And every once in a while, you'll hear something like, you know, when I saw it, I had to get it because it was just so you. And yet, it's estimated that almost 80% of people who receive Christmas gifts either exchange or return at least one of them. And you know what's very strange? There's rarely any talk between the giver and the givee as to whatever became of that gift. So hearing this, you might react thinking that people who return these gifts are dismissive, not just of the gifts, but also of the people who shopped so earnestly, so carefully for just the right thing. And if this is your reaction, guess what? You would be exactly right and exactly wrong. All of us, without exception, have a wealth of experiences. Growing up, most of us lived in a family structure in which we were constantly given things, gifted things from our siblings and very much from a parent or from our parents. And while there certainly are exceptions, the loved ones in our lives shopped, so to speak, very carefully, trying to gift us by instilling in us things that they thought were not just for us to be happy, but in many cases, they thought were necessary for us to survive. And just like many gifts that are given, they may have gotten some right, things that were perfect fits for us. Sometimes they may have gotten it wrong, even though they tried so desperately in such a loving way to give us what they thought they felt was best for us. And so paradoxically as it is, sometimes inadvertently, we were given gifts like fear. And we were given the gifts, we were taught to be afraid of certain things, to be afraid of certain people. And sometimes we were given gifts of a closed mind, gifts of being overcautious, gifts in which we were taught to diminish ourselves and to play small, not to draw attention to ourselves. We were taught to do things and to react in very certain ways. And most of the time, this was done to protect us, but it also came with an instilled inhibition towards spreading our wings and learning how to fly. And in very subtle ways sometimes, we were gifted with the idea that risk-taking was a really bad thing, and that playing small was absolutely the prudent way to make it through life. I remember when my daughters were young and we used to go to a swimming pool in Oak Park. We bought a season pass every summer for several years. And at this pool, they had a 10-meter platform in the diving pool area. My daughter, Lori, already had jumped from the 3-meter and the 5-meter platforms. Now here she was. As I remember, probably about 9 years old, and she literally wanted to take that big leap and jump from the 10-meter platform. 10 meters. That's like 33 feet. And they actually had a constant spray going on the water to break up the surface and try to reduce the hard impact for people who were jumping or diving from this height. And I looked at this and I said, ain't going to happen. No way. This is a really bad idea. She could get killed. I was aware that I was bringing out the gift of caution that had been imposed upon me and the gift of avoiding risk that had been imposed upon me by my own parents. Now, not only was I bringing it out and dusting it off and using it, I was really close to imposing it on my family. Fortunately, my wife insisted and said, no, it's okay. She can do this. And she turned to Lori and she said, go ahead. If you think you're ready, you go ahead. My wife was right. It was absolutely the right decision, regardless of the outcome. And thankfully, Lori made the jump gracefully. And that day she received a new gift, a gift of a sense of courage, a sense of confidence, and an earned sense of accomplishment. We often don't give much thought to these embedded gifts. Rarely do we take an inventory of them and ask the question, has the time come to discard it, to let it go? They just stay with us like those items in our closet that maybe used to fit or used to be in style. And because they've been with us for most of our lives, we tend to put them on every day, much like our favorite sweater or our favorite underwear. And as we continue to do this, we are constantly reaffirming that this is who and what we are. Susan used to love to watch a show that appeared on one of the cable channels. It was called What Not to Wear. I'm sure some of you have seen this at one time or another. And I just loved to make fun of the show and that Susan for watching it. But then I have to confess, I got hooked. In every single episode, they took a person and basically redid them. They would force the person to discard what she always had been so accustomed to wearing and to put on a new wardrobe that was more in line with contemporary trends. But they didn't stop there. A new hairstyle and makeup were always part of the package as well. And I grew fascinated watching the transitions. It was so hard for some of the people to let go of things like bright yellow sweaters with aqua flowers all over them. It was so hard for people to let go of who and what they always thought that they were, of what made them feel safe in order to chance becoming what they really were the whole time. It's so difficult for us to return what doesn't fit or no longer fits, even when we realize that it's not complimentary, even when we know that it maybe makes us look chubby or makes us look thin or makes us look old or makes us timid or frightened or unconfident. Even when we know what we got is not so great, at least we know we've got something. We give it up and who knows what will be, right? But my friends, if it doesn't fit, it's time to get rid of it. It's time to return it, exchange it, trash it, or whatever. And there are some things that never look good or wear well on any of us. Why would you continue to wear someone else's limitations that have been placed on you? Why would you ever continue to put on someone else's opinion, someone else's bad opinion about you? Why would you ever continue to get dressed every single morning, clothing yourself according to the way the world tells you what's right for you, even though you know deep inside and you actually feel a little bit ridiculous in the way that you show up sometimes? To refuse to continue showing up all dressed, all clad in fear and intimidation and smallness does not mean that we are dissing the people who gifted us with these things and these emotions, because they did that with loving intentions. To say no to wearing a heart that is too small for us or to a consciousness that's just too restrictive does not show disrespect to the well-intended messages that may have put us there. On the contrary, if we cannot exchange these gifts or donate them to Goodwill or trash them in some way, get rid of them, do we need to rid ourselves of them? What we are doing is not just dismissing those gifts we are there that are more fitting. We are dismissing the divine source that gave us gifts that are real. Years ago, when I was a young man of about 20, I came home one afternoon to find my dad and my mom in a really active wrestling match right in the middle of the floor. My mom was sitting on top of my dad, flailing away, and dad was in a fetal position, shouting out, "No, just stop it, Mom." And just as I started to ask, "What the heck is going on?" she managed to grab hold of his t-shirt, and with a mighty yank, she tore it right off of him. A true story. Dad wasn't very happy and began to use words that would make a sailor blush. And my mom was all out of breath, and she looked at me and she said, "He has shirts in the original packages that were given to him, and he never even open them. They're sitting in his drawer, and he refuses to change the same t-shirt that he's been wearing now for over a week." If you want to talk about dissing both the giver and the gift, what better way is there than to never even open the gift? I know a lady who did not open gifts that were given to her and her husband on their wedding day, and that was 50 years ago. Fine gifts. of silver in China, just sitting stored away, literally collecting dust for 5 decades. The Apostle Paul, in his letter to the Romans, tells us, clothe yourself with the Lord Jesus Christ and do not think how to gratify the desires of the flesh. Well, sadly, for centuries, the church took that quote and translated the desires of the flesh to pertain strictly to sex. And actually, I think it has a much broader perspective. I think this quote is just as relevant today as when Paul wrote it over 2,000 years ago. The Lord Jesus Christ is truly a gift from God, not just Jesus the man, but the consciousness of the Lord Jesus Christ. Paul's quote is telling us that we all share this gift. It is there for each and every one of us. He is telling us that life holds much more for us than merely surviving or getting by or catering to our fears and focusing on what we don't have. My dog, Rocky, is fed a half a cup of food twice a day. If I fed him 22 times a day, he would eat it, because that is where his animal instincts lie. What Paul is telling us is that there's a much greater gift available for all of us. We are better than dog think. We are more than our animal instincts. What Paul is telling us is that the Christ consciousness that Jesus wore so graciously is sitting in a box just waiting for us to open it. It's perfectly sized for you and who you are. It will fit you absolutely perfectly. And all you have to do first is remove that old worn-out t-shirt that you've been insisting upon wearing day in and day out. In the prodigal son, when the wayward son finally returns home, what's one of the first things that the father does? He tells his servants, quick, put on him the best robe, not just a robe, but the best robe, and a ring on his finger and sandals at his feet. Now keep in mind that when this son came home, he returned with a mindset that he was not worthwhile, that he was not worthy, that he wasn't entitled to be anything more than a mere servant for his father. But it was in this sense of lowliness, out of this sense of nothingness, his desire to satisfy his hunger with the same slop that the pigs were eating. This is where he was coming from, and now that it was time for him to let it go. And in doing so, he stuck his neck out and took a risk. He had no guarantees that his father wouldn't turn his back on him. And as I said, he would have been content just to have the same status as his dad's servants. But the father was overjoyed that his son returned. His father couldn't wait to lavish him with those gifts that were befitting royalty. The robe that he placed on his son metaphysically symbolized so much more than forgiveness. It was an invitation to wear a cloak that was his to wear at any time that he wanted to. And the ring that he placed on his son's finger affirmed his son's deservedness. The sandals that he had placed on his son's feet symbolized that while he walked on the earth, he was above the world, that he was in control. All of these gifts were symbolic of the real gift of the Father, an unrelenting, unyielding, insistent love for his son. A gift that's available to all of us the moment we decide to exchange those things about ourselves that don't fit, that just don't make any sense for us. And to say goodbye to the thoughts and the things in our lives that are statements, affirmations that we are something other than what we truly are, and what gifts each and every one of us really is. Gift giving in gift receiving, opening gifts. In a sense, they're both risks. In the video that we just watched, the mother comes home with a strange gift for her son. She gives him a gift of a puppy that has the same disability, in a sense, that her own son has. And at first, the son is frightened and reacted by literally kicking it aside. And even though the gift was opened by the son, he did not receive this gift into his heart until he realized that that puppy's disability did not inhibit that puppy from living the joy of life. And eventually the gift that the boy received was the restoration of knowing that being held back by a limitation or a disability was strictly his own decision, because we all have disabilities. And like that boy in the video, who needs to be gifted with something that reminds us of them, right? But we do have to understand that being disabled is a perception that dwells within our own heads. It may have been given to us. It may have been even gifted to us by a loved one. And it may have been imposed upon us. But hanging on to it is strictly ours and ours alone to own. I love the way the Gospels just have this beautiful habit of flipping things around. We hear about the Christmas story and the three magi, or the three kings, coming to visit this babe and bringing with them gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh to a baby lying in a manger, to a baby surrounded by straw and a feeding trough for the animals. How can you really look at this picture and understand what's going on and ever think that regardless of your circumstances, regardless of whatever guilt that you might be feeling for something or anything at all, regardless of the way you may have been put down or treated or mistreated in your life, regardless of how you've been told that you're lacking, that you don't measure up, that you're the wrong age or the wrong sex or the wrong color or whatever, how could you look at this picture and ever think that you're not worthy of what God is just absolutely pleading with you to accept? In these days of Christmastide, when we are deciding what we want to keep and what we want to get rid of, and with New Year's now just days ahead, it's a perfect time to reflect on what exactly is serving us and what exactly is holding us back. Life is too precious for us to be content eating with the pigs, especially when a loving father patiently is waiting to fit us with that royal robe that is just the right color and they're just the perfect fit for each and every one of us. So, with our gifts in mind, maybe we could come closer to deciding what works for us and really what doesn't work for us by taking it to prayer and meditation. Love that picture, by the way.